Good morning. The Government Operations and Elections Committee will come to order. We do have a quorum. We will start with House File 2722, Mazerol. I will move that House File 2722 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. House File 2722 refers to the application of municipal employee liability limits, and this bill was brought to me by my friend, County Attorney Michael Freeman, and he is the testifier on this particular bill.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, members, thank you very much. Just to put a little liveliness...
Oh, could you please identify yourself for the tape? I'm sorry.
Sorry, I'm Mike Freeman, the Hennepin County Attorney, and I'm also a friend of Pat Mazerol's. Now, why does an aptly articulate, mildly conservative representative from West Bloomington know a progressive Democrat from Richfield? You perhaps have not noted the competition between Richfield and Bloomington. Yet we have been friends for 30 years. How does that work? How does it work that he and I used to attend the same public meetings and drive each other home when the other person didn't have transportation? And how do we both have about the same age children and call ourselves friends in a partisan world? Well, we do because we respect each other, notwithstanding the fact that long time ago in 1982 we ran against each other. Pat's been a friend of mine ever since we met in the campaign trail. And I share that, Madam Chair, is because as you move into this time of the session, as I recall from my 8 years, sometimes emotions get a little high and we get a little frayed. But, you know, there were a lot of folks, a lot of you all that are friends with each other, and sometimes it's a little hard to say, but I have no problem saying that Mazerol is a friend of mine. So with that beginning, Madam Chair and members, this House file is a very minor but important clarification in our statutory immunity law. As members know, there has long been in the tradition in American and British law of statutory immunity. This legislature wisely said that there should not be an absolute immunity. But in recognition of some of the work that governmental units do, that this immunity could have the suits under tort could be limited, and the present cap is $500,000 a person and $1.5 million a case. The language before you that amends Section 466.04 subdivision A is a minor clarification to ensure that what the legislature passed 30 years ago is in fact the law. Briefly, let me suggest to you how it works. At present time, doctors who work for Hennepin County Medical Center, which is a municipally owned hospital, a kind of a quasi-municipally owned hospital, but it is owned, and one of the top Trauma 1 centers in the country, if not in the throughout the upper Midwest. Those doctors, if they perform surgery at that hospital and make a mistake and are sued for malpractice, the limits to be paid out on to the injured plaintiff from that is limited to $500,000 a person or $1.5 million per occurrence. If that doctor performs surgery on behalf of his client instead at Abbott Northwestern under contract to Hennepin County Medical Center, the cap's still covered, as they should. But many of the doctors at Hennepin County, not many, but a few of the doctors at Hennepin County Medical Center are the top flight specialists in their areas, a neonatal surgeon, for example. And their services are really are in demand elsewhere. So let's say our neonatal surgeon goes to Miller DeWan Hospital in Duluth and performs surgery there and tragically commits an act of malpractice. Well, his Hennepin County coverage and these statutory caps do not apply, and they shouldn't. He or she is moonlighting, and they're going there, and insurance held either by the doctor or Miller DeWan should cover them. We don't have any problem with that. This legislation doesn't impact that at all. But if that doctor then comes back to Hennepin County Medical Center, is within his employment there, and makes a mistake, there is a interpretation of the existing law, which I don't agree with, but an interpretation that because they moonlighted someplace else one time, they lose their statutory cap. I don't think that's what the legislature meant when they passed it 30 years ago. but we think this qualification and clarification is necessary. Why now? When it hasn't been challenged in 30 years, and there are no court opinions on it? Well, the real reason is because I don't totally understand the medical world, Madam Chair and members of the committee. But there was a time when the doctors were part of Hennepin County Medical Center. And then there was a time that they spun off, partially for reimbursement purposes. Now the doctors are back, and their former agency, the Hennepin Faculty Association, is dissolving. So they're back being employees at Hennepin County Medical Center. This is an issue now because yours truly and this office will be representing all of these doctors. This is not solely a Hennepin County issue. There are municipal hospitals throughout Minnesota. And in my review of most of those hospitals who have doctors as employees who would be covered here are emergency room physicians, which makes sense. A lot of doctors, particularly in greater Minnesota, have their own practice and have practicing privileges at the hospital. So in short, Madam Chair, to bring this monologue to a close, what we're trying to do is make a minor clarification to make sure that the law says what it was intended to say 30 years ago. Why do we do this, and why is this a big deal? Well, the insurance that the Hennepin County medical doctors were paying for was in the millions of dollars. Okay, I don't want them to be taking out that insurance when they come under Hennepin County's cap and we are self-insured in Hennepin County. This will save this hospital and these doctors several millions of dollars, and it will also reduce some anxiety that the doctors have. It seems to be a good thing for and a good clarification to remove that issue from courts and have it resolved the legislature. After all, you all drafted the language in the first place. Let's make sure it says what we meant it to say. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Mazerall or Mr. Freeman? Okay, I know we have someone here, Terry Wade, who would like to testify. Welcome to the committee, and if you could just identify yourself for the record before you start.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Terry Wade. I sort of feel like I'm at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I need to confess that I am a malpractice lawyer. I represent patients in medical malpractice cases. I represent the Republican patients and Democratic patients. Rich and poor, and have done so for 36 years. I'm also a member of the Minnesota Association for Justice. and fairly active Democrat and a friend of Mr. Freeman, I must also confess. I have to testify in opposition to this bill because it is part of a process of extending a denial of justice to patients of physicians making hundreds of thousands of dollars to protect physicians making hundreds of thousands of dollars from responsibility when their negligence causes tragedy. For example, if a physician at Hennepin County has a patient in labor and happens to be home drinking, and this isn't quite a real case, but it's very close to a case I handled involving Hennepin County and Hennepin Faculty Associate Physicians some years ago. I'm changing the facts enough so it's disguised a bit. But if that physician is home drinking and the nurses from Hennepin County call him to come because this lady's child is in trouble and needs his attention, and because he's drinking, he delays coming for hours, the result is a child that suffers catastrophic brain injury, necessitating a lifetime of care at the cost of millions of dollars, a loss of earnings of millions of dollars, and that's all we need to talk about. Even the medical expenses of millions of dollars and the earnings of millions of dollars would be limited in recovery to $500,000 under the program that Mr. Freeman has begun. That is not justice. And it's not authorized. I must respectfully disagree with Mr. Freeman that the physicians at the HCMC are, whether employed or not by HCMC, are limited to the protected by the $500,000 cap. They're not. This legislature denied that protection to those physicians when this legislature enacted Chapter 466 in 2005. At that time, the legislature specifically addressed this issue in Section 19 of that legislation and said the tort liability cap, and that's an insert from me, but it just clarifies the language. The tort liability cap in Chapter 466 does not apply to an action against any subsidiary, joint venture, association, or partnership of the corporation alleging malpractice, error, mistake, or failure to cure because of the actions of physicians or other healthcare providers employed by the entity, unless the entity has been organized to assume management of the entire corporation. That language is not entirely clear, but Representative Abrams was very clear on the House floor when he explained what that section means. Representative Abrams said the following, and I quote, "There is concern that Hennepin Faculty Associates would There is concern that Hennepin Faculty Associates would reorganize as a subsidiary of the new public corporation." The new public corporation, I might add, is the corporation that this legislature authorized for HCMC. This is the authorizing legislation for the current corporate structure of HCMC. There is concern Hennepin Faculty Associates would reorganize as a subsidiary of the new public corporation and get under the municipal tort law limitations. That certainly is not the intent of the author. The intent of the author is that physicians and other health care professionals be subject to tort laws, just like any practitioners in any setting. And what this language is basically comfort language. The current status will remain unchanged. The language may be to some extent inartful, but I did want to make a legislative record that if in fact there was an attempt to use the Municipal Corporate Liability Act in a way to shield the professionals, that that was not intended by this act, and that if that this language is not enough, there would be other language in the future. End quote. That's Representative Abrams. It was not the intent of this legislature or the legislation, and it did not authorize HCMC to do what apparently HCMC is attempting to do. And I do not believe that the physicians, whether employees of the HCMC or not, are protected by the liability cap. So the legislation that is currently proposed will or should have no effect, because the 170 plus physicians at HCMC are not currently protected. Now, if they were, and this legislation passed, and a physician is attending to a patient at Fairview as a moonlighter, and also has a patient at HCMC for whom he is responsible, and he's on the phone from Fairview talking to HCMC, which cap is he wearing, and does this change affect him? And it's not just about HCMC and 20 physicians at HCMC. This would affect an engineer working for a municipality involved, for example, in bridge design, who also practices privately, perhaps primarily practices privately, has a substantial insurance policy, but as an employee part-time of a municipality, participates in bridge design and the bridge collapses, he would be limited to $500,000. This body knows the injustice of such a situation. Mr. Freeman's bill extends far beyond a few physicians at HCMC. I'm happy to answer any questions that I can.
Thank you for your testimony. The members have any questions at this time? Is there anyone else that wanted to testify to this bill? Well, hold on a second. Representative Simon?
Yeah. Actually, it's not for Mr. Wade. It's for either Mr. Freeman or Representative Mazarell or proponents of the bill.
Okay. Proceed.
Thanks. Welcome back to the legislature.
Thank you,
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative, thank you very much.
So about these, let's talk about the HFA issue. So the HFA is dissolving or dissolved at this point. Is that right?
Mr.
Chairman, Representative Simon, HFA has dissolved. The only existence of HFA is to handle some of the final affairs of things that occurred prior to December 31st. So Mr. Wade's firm has got a case that occurred prior to December 31st, and they're continuing to do that without the caps. But all of the problems here and after, HFA doesn't exist. All the docs I'm talking to you about are now employees of Hennepin County.
Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, that was my next question. So how and to what extent are they public employees?
Yeah.
Mr. Freeman?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, they are now employees of Hennepin County Medical Center. Hennepin County Medical Center is, they are public employees, okay? I'm not going to burden this committee. The hospital is a partially broke off from the county, but that really isn't relevant here. These are employees. The same in Ortonville Municipal Hospital in Big Stone County, there is a doctor on staff, I believe that is the emergency room physician, who is an employee of that municipal hospital. He would be covered the same way I'm talking about here.
So, Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, so within the, and I understand there's some special governance issues with HCMC. It's got kind of semi-autonomy. I understand that, basically, enough to be dangerous, at least. But so who supervises these, the physicians, the former HFA physicians who are now employed by, at least in part, HCMC? What's the structure there?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, they are supervised primarily by other doctors, as the hierarchical review of doctors do in any hospital, public or private. And it's their committee that supervises them. It's their committee who establishes the training rules over and above whatever the rules that the Minnesota Board of Medical Examiners require.
Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, I know we're in a gray area here, and one of the ways that we're in a gray area has to do with compensation. Most public employees, as you know, there's a cap in place there, too. Yeah, right. I'm sure. For you, you wish that cap weren't in place, but there's a cap usually at the salary of the governor, and I know that can't be true for these physicians. I'm sure they make well above, probably multiples above what the governor makes. So how do we square that these are individuals who earn and probably deserve very large salaries? Isn't it true that they evade that particular cap? And so we're kind of in a gray area here, aren't we?
Mr. Freeman?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, let me try to answer as precisely as I can. Yes, the doctors are paid a lot more than you and I are, as legislators or county attorneys. Doctors at the University of Minnesota hospitals are paid a lot more. Doctors are paid more. The question really here is, do these doctors that were once working for an outside agency, HFA, Hennepin Faculty Associates, which has dissolved, who are now employees of that, do they need to carry separate insurance to cover the catastrophic cases in the neighborhood of $10 to $15 million? I will point out
to the committee that in our review of this process on due diligence when we were advising them, we found that there was fewer than one case per year that approached the half a million, and that there was no cases that we could find in the last 15 years that had been that went over $5 million. None. And there was only one of those. Now, so why do we do this? Why do we bother? Why do you have to listen to two lawyers argue before the committee? I recall very clearly my dear friend Clarence Perfers, the senator from Faribault, would say to Senator Fritz Kanak and I, you two young lawyers, quit arguing. You're not talking sense to us. And I said, Senator Perfers, you were right most of the time, and Senator Kanak and I would agree with you. But we're here because the issue is, how much additional monies does a hospital have to spend to buy insurance on the uncertainty of that periodic case? Can we avoid that cost to the municipal hospital, which in final shape is backed up financially by the property taxpayers of Hennepin County? And not only to Hennepin County, and I believe I'm still accurate about the Ortonville Hospital, but let me go. I know there's a number of communities, and I think Ortonville still has a physician in that. Will the taxpayers of Ortonville and Big Stone County be required to purchase additional insurance or not for those physicians who are employees of the municipal hospital? I don't think that's necessarily good public policy or a necessary expense, and that's why I'm here.
Representative Simon.
Chairman, may I comment?
Mr. Rain?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I feel compelled to make a couple of comments here. Mr. Freeman makes comments that he wants to save Hennepin County money. What he's actually doing is saving physicians earning hundreds of thousands of dollars money. They were earning hundreds of thousands of dollars before they became employees of Hennepin County, and I expect they're earning hundreds of thousands of dollars today. And it's the premiums that they paid that they're no longer going to have to pay at the cost to private citizens who have been terribly damaged. Maybe not very often, and I agree. Mr. Freeman is right. Hennepin County does a wonderful job. And among the facilities that I bring actions against, Hennepin faculty or Hennepin County Medical Center is a rarity. And I will state that publicly. They are a rarity. They do very good work. But sometimes they have a physician who drinks. And sometimes that physician does terrible things and causes catastrophic injury. And even if a $5 million case only occurs once every 5 years, that's a tragedy, and it isn't right to impose that tragedy on that individual or family to the benefit of physicians who earn hundreds of thousands of dollars. Mr. Freeman talks about Ortonville. I know about Ortonville. Wyatt Persicky, a little boy, was delivered in Ortonville by a physician in Ortonville. That little boy's mother was given a chemical to accelerate contractions, and the chemical was not adequately monitored, and those contractions became too close together, and they lasted for hours, too close together, and the evidence was that this baby was losing its oxygen, and at the end, the doctor panicked, not at that time an employee of Ortonville Hospital, but in private practice. In the only clinic in Ortonville. He panicked, and so he took a vacuum extractor and he put it on Wyatt Persicky's head, and he pulled, and he couldn't get Wyatt out. And he pulled again. He never turned the chemical off. The contractions are still coming too close together. He never gave her a drug, terbutaline, which would have stopped the effect of that chemical. But he pulled, and he pulled. He pulled seven times. The rule is three. He pulled seven. He couldn't get the baby out. He isn't qualified to do a cesarean section. He called his uncle, who can do cesarean sections. His uncle came. His uncle put forceps on. Tried, couldn't get the forceps on. The contractions were coming so close together. Finally, they delivered Wyatt. Wyatt was catastrophically brain injured. Wyatt will live in a group home for the rest of his life. That case was tried in Morris. And a jury in 2.5 hours awarded $9.5 million. After that verdict, Ortonville Hospital collapsed the clinic and hired the physicians. And now they have a $500,000 cap. And it's not right. It didn't affect Wyatt, but it'll affect the next baby that is delivered by the same physician, now an employee of Ortonville Area Health Services, a subsidiary of Ortonville Municipality. And it isn't right, Mr. Freeman. It isn't right.
To a follow-up question, Representative Winkler. Or Representative Simon. Sorry, on to Representative Winkler. I get you two confused.
Madam Chair, you obviously weren't in state government this morning where we had a major policy difference right in front of everybody. But
that, I'll have to watch the tape, Representative Winkler.
It's very exciting, I promise you. Mr. Freeman, I just want to make sure I understand. I mean, well, let me just preface my question. I've had three children, all born at HCMC under the care of a physician at who is an HFA physician who is now a Hennepin County employee. My wife has type 1 diabetes, so every one of them were high-risk pregnancies. We chose HCMC because they are experts at high-risk pregnancies. Dr. Virginia Lupo is probably the best physician you could have for those purposes. It was under the old system. My first son, when he was born, he had a cord wrapped around his neck, but fortunately, because they knew what they were doing, they were monitoring his oxygen levels as he was born. He was delivered by emergency C-section. Everything turned out fine. So I have personal experience and great concern about these exact facts. In addition to that, in the bridge collapse case, I carried the bill that disregarded, essentially, the state liability caps for that disaster. And over time, I've really come to believe that we shouldn't have liability caps for state or local government at all in any way. The reason why we have them is because we don't want to buy insurance or we don't want to self-insure. And I think there's a very real economic and risk avoidance purpose of insurance, because what insurance does is it applies an economic pressure on an institution to make sure they're doing things in the right way. And if you have an artificial cap in place, just like any other tort liability cap, you are taking away the financial interest that the organization or the institution has to make sure that they are following all the correct procedures. Now, I have a tremendous respect for the professionals and the physicians at HCMC, and I think there is a limit to the amount of financial pressure that having to be insured and purchase medical malpractice insurance would have on their professionalism and their standards. So I don't think we're going to see dramatic changes one way or the other, but I do think that you're creating an excellent hospital is creating a physician group that is not subject, that is subject to a tort liability cap that limits the awards that are potentially paid out to people in very serious and heart-wrenching situations. And I'm not sure that I think the cap should apply at all. We're not going to take that up. I mean, HCMC is going to operate under the cap in general. These physicians coming in may or may not, I guess, depending on what we do here. But would it be so that's kind of all the preface to my question, which is it the doctors themselves who would end up having to purchase medical malpractice insurance, or does the county pay for it as a benefit of employment? You know, as a lawyer, I'm covered under my employer's E&O policy. I don't have to buy my own legal malpractice insurance when I work in-house. How is it going to be treated at Hennepin County?
Mr. Freeman?
Madam Chair, Representative, if this bill does not pass, the Hennepin County Medical Center doctors who used to work for HFA, which is dissolved, will be covered by the caps for everything they do at Hennepin County Medical Center. For everything they do at Abbott Northwestern, if that's a Hennepin County patient, that will be covered as well. The only thing that will not be covered, certainly, for certain, which we're trying to do a clarification here, is if that Dr. moonlights and goes up and elsewhere and he comes back. Now, I will argue at great length Mr. Wade's recollection and discussion with Representative Abrams is only superseded by discussion I had 6 weeks ago with now Judge Abrams. And, you know, Hennepin County Faculty Associates isn't backdooring their way into Hennepin County Medical Center to avoid the caps. They're coming back in the wave of what goes on in healthcare in terms of
hospitals having doctors as their employees in large amounts. That's the reason they're coming back. But what is presented to me is the question, as now they're an attorney for all these doctors, which I wasn't before, how are they covered? Okay, the premiums that they will have to pay for whatever insurance if they moonlight, and let me tell you, the docs that moonlight are the people who have, generally, are the people who have the most unique specialties. We want to have that neonatal surgeon working for Hennepin County Medical Center because that builds the strength of that hospital. And that person can't practice their craft because Hennepin County Medical Center, thankfully, doesn't have enough people who need that service. So they need to work elsewhere. Okay? And they're going to work elsewhere. The question, and when they do, as my, you know, my example with Miller DeWan, they're going to have insurance there. The only question is when they come back. And there is an interpretation of this law, like there are a lot of things that we write in the legislature, that are they covered for work than they do when they come back to Hennepin County. That's the only thing I'm doing. I'm not trying to create statutory immunity caps. Those were created by the British Crown 1,000 years ago. And this legislature intelligently and smartly provided an exception to those caps and made sure payment could occur for people injured. I agreed with that, okay? And I've represented people in medical malpractice plaintiff cases as well in my days of private practice. Not as well as Mr. Wade, but I have represented folks, and I understand those issues. What I'm here trying to say is the doctors are not going to pay this insurance premium. The hospital is. And what we're looking at this, we're trying to provide them some certainty. If you don't pass this law, we will litigate these issues in court at great expense to Mr. Wade's clients and to us. And that's fine. That's what courts are for. It seems to me there has not been a court case on this issue for 30 years. I'd like to have some clarity for my clients. One of the things that people do in the practice of law is to provide, try to predict outcomes for their clients so they know how to move forward. That's what we're trying to do here. This is not massive tort reform, members. This is trying to clarify a piece of language that's been unclear for 30 years. That's all we're asking for. That's all this language will do.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I guess I can call you Senator Freeman. I just want to be really clear what the bill does. As I read this, if we do under current law as it appears to be written, if you practice outside of HCMC at all, you are not in any way covered by the tort liability cap.
That is correct.
If we change the law, you will be covered under the HCMC tort liability cap while you're at HCMC, but if you are practicing at some other hospital or in some other setting, you will not be covered by the tort liability cap, and in that case, you will have to, that physician will have to have their own malpractice insurance.
Madam Chair, Representative, that is correct.
Okay, just so I want to make sure I understand. I'm still not really sure. It seems to me those physicians are still going to end up paying for that insurance for work outside, and this isn't the bill to remove the tort liability cap for HCMC. Yeah. But if one came, I would certainly vote for it.
Yeah, Madam Chair,
I'm sorry. I've struggled about how to. Took me a long time to figure this out. We are only trying to cover one incident here, okay? The doc who goes outside and performs services there with no problem comes back in Hennepin County Medical Center in that hospital, creates an act of malpractice. The question is, when they're doing that, do the caps apply? And it's just not clear with this language. All we're saying is when you come back and you're doing work at Hennepin County Medical Center, you ought to be covered just like you were before you went out and moonlighted. Now, the easiest way to solve this is to tell the docs they can't moonlight. But then we lose that neonatal surgeon and we lose some of the top folks because that's what they need to do to practice their profession. I mean, I knew this was going to be a challenge, folks. But it's a pretty narrow piece. The comments about the overall tort liability in the immunity, and should there be any caps, that's a different argument and for a different day. And by voting down Representative Mazarol's bill, you're not going to accomplish much on that. What you're going to do is make life a little bit more difficult for us, but it's not the end of the world. It's a clarification that we think ought to be made here at the legislature to make some policy rather than some courtroom, because we'll have that courtroom doing it sometime 20 or 30 years from now.
You're done, Representative Winkler? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Winkler asked one of my questions about whether they're going to be covered for their moonlighting acts under the liability, and Mr. Freeman answered that question. But the other question I have here is, how is this different from, you know, they're talking if they work outside and then they come work for the hospital, how is it different from someone that maybe started working for Hennepin County Medical Center, leaves and goes to work in private practice, and then a few years later comes back and then becomes another employee, or becomes an employee again of Hennepin County Medical Center? I guess under the argument of the other gentleman, they wouldn't be covered by the caps because they left and came back. And how is this different from any other employee that, say, worked in private practice and then came to work for Hennepin County? Are they saying that, well, because they worked outside of Hennepin County, now they can never be covered by those caps? And I guess that's the question I have here is, how is this different from any other employee that works in private sector and then comes to work for the county?
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative, you have a very, very good question. And the fact is, if you're an employee of Hennepin County and you commit your malpractice while you're employee, while you're working in that hospital, you're covered. Doesn't matter where you worked before. But there's a little uncertainty in this language if you're moonlighting while you're employee of Hennepin County. Okay? If you're an employee, you're covered. When you're not an employee, you're not covered. When you come back as an employee, you're covered. The only question is, that employee of Hennepin County who goes out and moonlights while they're employee, they're not covered by the caps. They got to get insurance. But when they come back into Hennepin County, are they covered? And I think they are, under the existing language. Good people disagree, and I'd rather have it resolved here than in a courtroom.
Okay. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I guess I had the same question that Representative Nelson did and Representative Winkler. My question then further is, how often does this happen? Does this happen weekly? I mean, are these doctors going, coming, going, coming, going, coming all the time so that then it's a question, or do they go for like 2 years and then come back?
Mr. Freeman?
Madam Chair, Representative, these doctors do work in other hospitals periodically. It's only a few of them, and it's only usually just the specialists. And we haven't had this issue in 30 years, okay? This language is 30 years old, okay? The problem is the question of coverage will come in a case that will cost millions and millions of dollars, and that's why we're here. So, as I said, the doctors who are working outside the Hennepin County Medical Center will have to have their other coverage, and they'll have to go buy insurance, and that's part of the cost of doing business, either for the hospital that has them there or the doctor. Okay, but when they come back in, that's our issue, and I think Representative Nelson really pointed, what's the difference between employee, not an employee, coming back to an employee, or employee moonlighting, coming back? And there really is no fundamental difference, but we're trying to get that clarification.
Representative Scalzi.
And the question I asked was, do they do this weekly, or do they do this every 2 years? I'm just trying to get a handle on what we're talking about.
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's your witness didn't answer the question, Representative Lawyer. I'm sorry. The claims are extremely rare. The number of trips elsewhere are quite rare. That's why they're employed in Hennepin County. But their specialty is so unique that they need to service folks in other facilities, and they do that. So I don't think it's on a weekly basis. When I looked at it, I think there's a total of 12 to 18 doctors that do this out of the 175. We're trying to cut the numbers of those back. We want to keep them in Hennepin County. It makes my life easier, and frankly, I think they ought to be there. But they need to practice their skill, and people need them to be treated elsewhere. So I would say of those 12 or 18, they probably moonlight 10 to 30% of the time. That's the best guesstimate I can give you.
May I comment, Madam
Mr. Wayne?
Madam Chair, members. One of the reasons this statute hasn't been addressed in many years is because Hennepin physicians weren't covered by the cap. They've never been covered by the cap while they were at Hennepin Faculty Associates. And so when I would bring an action against a physician at Hennepin Faculty Associates who was practicing at HCMC, the cap didn't apply whether they worked outside of HCMC as well or not. It just didn't apply. And when this legislation authorize HCMC to operate in its current corporate structure in 2005, this legislature specifically said, and we don't want the positions covered by the cap. Representative Abrams' comments on the House floor, on the record, make that absolutely clear, that the positions were not to be covered. And what's going to happen is people who happen to go to a municipal hospital, whether it's at Hennepin County Medical Center or in Ortonville, and if what Mr. Freeman is doing here is successful, will happen at every municipal hospital around this country. In municipal hospitals, physicians will not have to pay for their negligence, whether they're drinking, whatever it is, they won't have to pay more than $500,000. That wasn't the law. That was not authorized by the legislation in 2005. And this is a backdoor way to extend that unjust cap to hundreds, perhaps thousands of physicians around the country, around the state. And it's not right.
Do you have a follow-up? Representative Scalzi?
No, you're fine.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I work in healthcare finance, and I kind of trying to put the pieces together from that life and this discussion. I know that physician reimbursement includes kind of calculation for time and effort, expertise, and overhead costs. And the overhead cost is supposed to also cover malpractice, and that's of course why physicians are so highly paid, or a big chunk of it. So I may be revisiting the 2005 legislature's decision, but I don't understand why are we changing the economics of this business by even having this cap at all? If physicians are paid to struggle with the risk, the liability.
Mr. Freeman?
Madam Chair, Representative, unfortunately we never start from a clean slate. We deal with what? And we are, first off, we deal with a 1,000-year-old concept that the sovereign could not be made to pay even for his own mistakes. That's why you couldn't sue the king. Okay. This legislature intelligently said, no, we're not going to have absolute sovereign immunity, but we're going to protect municipalities and engineers and doctors against suits in excess of $500,000 per person and $1.5 million for a group. Okay. Now, these doctors came back into the medical center, and they no longer exist, so the 2005 legislation doesn't apply. I respectfully disagree with my friend and distinguished colleague, Mr. Wade. It simply doesn't, if you read it carefully. There is no Hennepin Faculty Associates. These are now employees, so it doesn't apply. But they came back for a number of reasons, because that's the movement in healthcare. It also, I would like to say immodestly, they came back because they're now represented by the Hennepin County Medical Center and by the Hennepin County Attorney's Office that charges $100 an hour instead of $400 or $500 or $600 an hour by other private firms. And I'm proud that my law firm can represent those people and do a darn good job of it. But one of the questions is this little narrow area. Now, if you all can't pass it, and I respect your judgment if you can't, we'll live with it. We'll litigate it. It will cost not the doctors but the hospital, millions of dollars. Exactly how much? It won't be $100 million. They were paying premiums of about $1.8 or $9 million, okay, plus some other things. That will be an increased cost that they may have to bear. Or the hospital may just say, we'll risk it, okay? It happens so rarely, we'll just take the chance because we self-insure. You know, I don't know. That's a financial decision the folks like you make.
Representative Green, and if we could wrap this up in a few minutes, like say within 10, this has taken much longer than I thought, and I do need to also announce, Representative Masrell, clearly I was in error when I moved this to the general register. I think it does need to go to civil law, so I will, as long as I've got the mic here, I will amend my motion that House File 2722 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to civil law. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up, I do commend the county for being able to do, provide your attorney services for less than perhaps those physicians would receive elsewhere. However, it doesn't change how the physicians, or if they're salaried, HCMC, is paid. They're paid by private insurers or Medicare or Medicaid amounts that account for the malpractice expense. And so, you know, I appreciate your valiant efforts to keep the cost down, but nonetheless, that money is coming to you, and it's made to cover these kinds of expenses.
Mr. Freeman?
Madam Chair, Representative, I can't disagree with your conclusion about how health care is financed. I can just say that if this piece of legislation does not pass, Hennepin County Medical Center doctors will still be covered under the caps. They will do for everything that they do when they're there at the building and everything they do for their patients, but in Hennepin County Medical Center patients at Abbott. It's just as, and they're not going to be covered up at Miller Dewan, and they shouldn't be. The only question is when they come back. And what I'm concerned about is that equally capable plaintiff's lawyer like Mr. Wade will go after this, and we will litigate this in court. And it just seems to me makes sense to resolve this here with you all who wrote the law in the first place to give us a clarification. If you choose not to, I respect that. I'd like you to do that. That would be better for my client, and I think it'd be better for municipal taxpayers generally, because they're the people who support the hospital at the end.
Okay. I would like to hear Attorney Wade's response.
Okay. Mr. Wade?
Thank you. I can't restrain myself from pointing out that a drunk physician making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year at Hennepin County Medical Center is not the king. We don't have kings. That same physician making hundreds of thousands of dollars at Fairview or Fairview Ridges or at St. John's or St. Joe's makes hundreds of thousands of dollars too and provides professional liability insurance to protect victims of departures from accepted standards of medical practice from negligence. I haven't heard Mr. Freeman tell us that the physicians are going to take a big cut in pay in order to be relieved of their professional liability responsibility and liability for children who may well have a catastrophic brain injury. There are wonderful physicians at Hennepin Faculty Association. There are wonderful lawyers in Mr. Freeman's firm. I can attest to that. I trained at least three of them. For quality of life reasons, they've chosen a different practice. They're wonderful lawyers. I have litigated with lawyers at Mr. Freeman's firm. They're every bit as good as the lawyers I litigate with anywhere else. And I'm pleased that he wants to charge $100 an hour and a lot less than and they can still do all of that, and the premiums will reflect that. But it doesn't change the fact that his physicians aren't charging $100 an hour, and they're still dealing with catastrophic issues, and every so often they make a bad mistake, and they shouldn't be protected the way Mr. Freeman's trying to protect them. The authorizing legislation, all due respect, Mr. Freeman, I believe the physicians that are currently employees of Hennepin County Medical Center need to be advised that it is no sure bet they're protected by the cap, because I respectfully do not believe they are. This legislature did not authorize that step, not at Hennepin County or at other municipal hospitals. And it's really an extension of an injustice that ought not be tolerated.
Representative Winkler?
Pass.
Okay. Representative Simon? Okay. This will get another, you'll get another chance at this in civil law with all the attorneys, so I'm sure we'll have lots of discussion there. Is there anyone else that has to say anything about this bill in the audience? Bills they need to testify? Okay. Well, seeing no other questions, I'll renew the motion that House File 2722 be recommended to pass and be referred to Committee on Civil Law. Did you want to wrap up, Representative Mazarol?
Sure, Madam Chair and members. I just want to point out and wrap up by saying, you know, statutory liability for municipalities is our public policy. Not sovereign immunity, as it used to be, but statutory limited liability of $500,000 per person, $1.5 million per case. The doctors at HCMC are county employees and therefore should fall within that. And this bill is only intended to clarify in statute what's intended to accomplish that public policy without interpretive confusion.
Thank you. Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion does prevail. Thank you. And we'll move on to the next bill, House File 2458, Representative Torkelson. Representative Torkelson, this I understand that you want to talk about an amendment. It didn't meet the deadline, and it's got some questions, so I think the best motion would be to move it to this bill to State Government Finance to address your amendment, if that would be okay with you.
That would be fine with me, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I was going to say we don't have the amendment in our packet.
We don't have it yet. And Representative Torkelson, I will move House File 2458. And then would you like to talk about the amendment or your bill first?
I'd like to talk about the bill first, Madam.
Okay, we'll talk about the bill, and we won't be voting on the amendment, but I'll give Representative Torkelson a minute to talk about the amendment, and they can address it in State Government Finance. To your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. House File 2458 is titled Advisory Inspections. This really reflects a mechanism that's used by OSHA, where they come into a business that they need to inspect and do a kind of a no-fault inspection to a degree, that they work with the business to go through that business and identify issues that may be a permit violation, but there is not the threat of penalty. They come through, they walk through, the business then has an opportunity to correct these issues and move on with doing their business without having to pay a penalty. This would bring a similar system to state government, the various agencies in state government that issue permits. Business would request that that the agency come in, do a walkthrough, and identify issues that may be permit violations. There are a number of off ramps. We're not trying to protect people that are egregiously abusing their privileges as a business in the state, and those are listed in the near the end of the bill. There's a couple of changes that will be added, including the amendment that we'll talk about in a moment. I'd also propose in the next committee that this be limited to an annual affair, that they couldn't do this month after month or week after week. If you take a look at the amendment, this is where we develop a mechanism whereby to pay for this process, and the business requesting the advisory inspection would pay the direct and necessary expenses that are incurred by the agency performing the inspection. That's a brief description of the bill, Madam Chair. I will stand for questions. I believe there are some testifiers that would like to address the bill.
I do have a Kurt Kadelka. Now he would like to testify. Not sure if there are others. Representative Nelson?
Afterwards.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and I know you're not Mr. Kadelka, so if you could just identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chair, Representatives. My name is Jeff Connell. I'm the Manager of Compliance and Enforcement at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And I had a couple comments about the proposed legislation this morning. three main things that I wanted to point out related to the agency's operation regarding these kind of assistance inspections and audits, if you will. The first is, we run a program called the Green Star Program. It's authorized by Chapter 114C. This is an entirely voluntary program funded by the business. They do a self-audit. They get an enforcement waiver. They get waiver from any penalties for violations they identify and correct. And then when they submit their paperwork to us and we approve it, we issue a Green Star. And, luckily enough for us in the last few years, having a Green Star certificate and recognition on a website, that kind of publicity, has been something of some marketing value to certain businesses. I bring this up to make sure that we already actively participate in this program. Our goal is compliance. We're not against the theme of this legislation. We think businesses obtaining compliance voluntarily this is a good thing. It saves all of us time, money, effort. And that's why we like this program. We've been doing this for a little over 15 years, and we do on average about 40 to 50 of these green stars a year. About 3 years ago, we had over 200 sand and gravel operations participate in the program, do their own self-audits, identify any problems, correct them. No penalties to any of them. In the program that we've run in this Green Star program for over 15 years, we have never penalized a company that did its own audit, identified violations and corrected them, and then reported to us what they did. So we're very proud of this program. We think it's very similar to this voluntary inspection program being proposed today. The second piece is we already offer this service. Any business is free to call us and say, would you please come out and take a look at our operation? It doesn't come with all of the protections that might otherwise be in this statute, but as we often like to point out, most of our enforcement staff's work is on helping businesses achieve compliance. Back when I was an inspector, we would go out, we would see a business, they would talk to us about, what if we did this, what if we did that, does this look okay, does that look okay? This was all part of, you know, regulatory compliance assistance that we offered. And even to this day, that is the majority of the work that we do in compliance. The third comment I wanted to make about the proposed legislation really does relate to the policy issues kind of buried within it. I won't specifically address the finance issue. You know, we have that pending amendment to it. Certainly there would be a fiscal issue without that. One of the key components of this legislation is that if the waiver of enforcement might otherwise affect federal funding or have a federal impact, say, on our delegation of authority to run the federal regulations and rules related to environmental protection, it's going to necessarily require a conversation with EPA about whether it's appropriate to waive a penalty or not, and whether waiving that penalty for this business based on what we saw is going to affect either our funding or potentially our delegation. Now, those two conversations kind of being awkward and icky, I guess is the technical words I'd have for them, because I have to deal with those people every day. But more importantly is, by running an effective compliance program in Minnesota, we keep EPA out. And any business that's had to deal with them would say, it's a good thing. We're more flexible, we're local, we're more responsive, and we don't want to have to deal with Chicago, we don't want to deal with federal compliance issues. So a major concern that the agency has with this is that if it necessarily involves a conversation with the Environmental Protection Agency, it's going to unnecessarily complicate the assistance efforts, the Green Star program that we already administer. The last piece related to the policy portions of this is that there's a section about having an opportunity to issue a penalty if the violations are willful, a pattern of misconduct, and documented to be designed to avoid penalties and enforcement. And while, you know, our Green Star program has similar language in it about enforcement penalty waivers, that provision in itself could unnecessarily cause more civil actions, more acrimony, and more investigation and documentation related to what a business was doing or not doing than even what we otherwise do today under our Green Star program. And I know I speak kind of quickly. I wanted to get on the record kind of our comments. I understand we're going to go to a separate committee related to the finance that will solve the majority of our concerns related to this. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to take them.
Representative Scalzi? Representative Nelson.
Why don't you let Representative Scalzi ask?
Okay, Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. My question would be for Representative Torkelson. What is it that you think the Green Star program is not addressing to make this legislation necessary?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scalzi. This bill really is aimed at all agencies that issue permits. It's not just PCA, and I believe it would actually broaden the availability of the Green Star. I'm not real familiar with the Green Star program, but would broaden the availability of advisory inspections at least to all other agencies and perhaps make it a little more readily available even within PCA. I've had conversations with permittees that I apparently were not aware of the Green Star program.
Representative Scalzi?
So we're looking at a bill, and you're saying that in time you're going to have another amendment that would maybe make it once a year. See, to me, if somebody is asking for this help and we're providing it and they're paying for it, it should be a one-time. You should be able to, just in owning and operating a small business myself, and I have to follow rules and regulations. If something's wrong, I correct it, and then we go forward. We don't go backward and do that something wrong again. So I guess what I'm asking is, why wouldn't it just be a one-time thing if somebody really wants to follow the rules that we all follow?
Representative Torkelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scalzi, as you know and I know, regulation, the structure of regulation changes over time, and in fact the regulations that are chosen to be enforced sometimes changes over time. And as those dynamics change through time, I think it's perfectly appropriate that this be available on an ongoing basis.
Yeah. Representative Scalzi.
Does this pertain to, I mean, something in your area or whatever, I'm assuming somebody has brought this concern to you, and I'm wondering, can you tell us what the concern was so that we can kind of understand where this is coming from?
Representative Torkelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scalzi, really this the impetus for this has come for those that have participated in the OSHA program. They found it valuable and effective and feel that it would be also valuable and effective for state agencies to incorporate a similar program.
Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess that was the question. One of the questions I had, I'm very familiar with the MnSTAR program through OSHA. I wasn't aware of the Green Star program, but I, as Representative Torkelson says, that's been an effective program. I mean, I see the concept. I like the concept of this, and I just have some concerns about the amendment, about a fiscal cost to the general fund with this, and so I think this has. That's why I think it has to go to government or state government finance, because there's fiscal implications with this. But the idea that the regulatory boards that we have should be there to help our businesses in the state comply and not look being out there trying to catch them doing something wrong and then finding them. And I know that's the way MnSTAR works, is that as I participated in it, they go out to these bigger projects, the employers agree, the contractors agree that they're going to let them come in, and they usually come in on the big project once a month. They do walkthroughs. When they find things, the employer corrects them right away. It makes the workplace safer. It's been a good program overall. It cuts down on the number of fines that go out there, but that's not the reason why those agencies are there. They're there to make a safer workplace. And your intent of this, I like the intent of it. It's just getting through the details and working it out. But I guess the question I have is, what brings this? Is there an incident that in your life that you've come about or somebody's brought to you that brought this to you, to your attention, and that you're bringing this forward?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nelson, I have never been fined by any state agency, so this is not a personal thing. This really, as I stated earlier, is just an understanding of the value, as you stated, of the programs that are already in existence, and to broaden the scope and the range of those programs to other state agencies and make it more readily available to permittees all across the state.
Representative Nelson?
Madam Chair, I guess with the amendment, I guess we're not on the amendment yet, but I guess the concern I have, and maybe it's not a concern as much as I can see an agency using this as a way of funding the agency by charging people for these inspections and backfilling part of their budget, and on the other hand, the fines that go out go into the general fund, so there'd be a loss to the general fund if we cut down on the number of fines going out there. So I mean, that's why I think it has to go to finance. But I guess that's my concern with the amendment.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Representative Beard.
Just a brief comment to Representative Torkelson's bill, and I like the thrust of this. As you know, from being in transportation, I get a little cranky sometimes when we come down heavy on people after rules have changed, because rules change routinely, and the feds often will promulgate rules and then tell our agencies they got to go out and enforce them, oftentimes with the threat of losing federal funding. Having any agency offer this as a voluntary service, as I read it, obviously if it's voluntary, I don't know how we could fall into the trap of having agencies use it as a money-making adventure. But certainly if the deal is, the objective is compliance for safety or public welfare purposes, this I would much prefer. And I'm thinking back to a thing the FAA started many years ago when they were having incidents, and the Airline Pilots Association was complaining that oftentimes in their area of work, they felt constrained on reporting unsafe situations or things they thought could be improved upon, because the FAA had one hat, and that was enforcement. And if anybody raised a finger and said, excuse me, this situation west of Chicago probably could be improved upon, you could probably count on 6 months off without pay just for being involved in the incident or whatever. So they created something through NASA, and it's called the NASA paperwork file. So if you're in a situation that you think somebody should take a look at and give you some advice, everybody in there is immune from prosecution or anything like that, unless there was criminal intent going on. And that has been a marvelous success in allowing people to talk freely that otherwise wouldn't, under threat of prosecution or fine or worse. So having like a mini NASA program for every agency here so people can talk freely or have someone come out and look before the fact just strikes me as a part of the common sense. Maybe you could call it reform. I just call it common sense. I like voting for common sense. Thanks.
Is there anybody else that would like to testify? Any other member questions? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 2458 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance.
Are we going to put, Madam Chair, are we going to put the amendment on, or?
Representative Nelson, I mentioned at the beginning that we are not going to, I just wanted him to explain it.
Okay.
This is really, didn't meet the 24-hour rule, and I think that this is something that state government should address, so I prefer not to handle that at this time, so it will not be as amended. Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. And we'll have Representative Mahoney come up, and just so that I don't forget, I do want to lay out the timeline for this week. As we all know, it's the deadline week, and we have a very aggressive schedule, so I'm going to please check the what was that?
We got three bills on the calendar today. This is aggressive.
Oh, this is, maybe you won't feel that way when I give you the agenda for the week, and it will be posted, but I just want to, so that you can think through your calendars here. We'll be meeting tomorrow from 10:15 till 12, and then we're going to reconvene at 6 in room 300 south. The 10:15 meeting will be in the regular place here. Thursday, we're going to, State Government Finance will not be meeting, for those of you who have State Government Finance, and we're going to meet here at 8:45 through noon, and we will, what we don't get done, we'll reconvene at 6 p.m. in 300 South, and then at Friday, we'll be meeting at 9 a.m. here till 11:30, and then we'll reconvene again at 2:15 in room 5, so we do have quite an aggressive agenda. I just wanted to let you know that so you can work through your schedule, and we'll get an email too. So, anyway, having said that, Representative Winkler,
we don't have there's no State Government Finance meeting tomorrow morning either.
So we could meet earlier. We will look into it. Are folks open to meeting earlier? Okay, we'll look and see if we can get the room. And so check your email, and then that would be good, because then maybe we could alleviate some of the night meeting. Okay, Representative Mahoney. Anyone like to move Representative Mahoney's bill? Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move House File 2614 be recommended pass and place, I don't know, where should it go?
Madam Chair, if it could go to the floor, that would be just fine with me. I don't think there's anything really serious here.
I think it needs to go to Judiciary, though. It's my understanding they requested it.
Okay.
Well, then my motion will be that it go to Judiciary.
To your bill, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I passed out essentially what this bill is. House File 2614 There was a an action brought by an administrative law judge in front of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The commission sided with the administrative law judge. The administrative law judge asked that the line, and that's the on the bill, that's the language that's there, be struck. An administrative law judge and compensation judge must retire upon attaining age 70. Is declared discriminatory, and if we don't take that language out, they will sue and they will win. And there's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. Pretty simple. Those judges get to work until they choose to retire. That's all this bill does. And I have the Assistant Chief Administrative Law Judge, Judge Tim O'Malley, here to testify if there's any questions. And I have the legislative, the governmental affairs person from the Department of Labor and Industry, where the these administrative law judges are. And that's why I was kind of not understanding why it's going to judiciary, but committees are always fun.
Yeah, I, Representative Mahoney.
And I'll stand for any questions.
Try to accommodate the chair's request.
Always good to be chair.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a great bill, Representative Mahoney. I tried either 2 or 3 years ago, I can't remember, to carry a similar bill for the judicial branch, not administrative law judges, but for regular members of the judiciary. That was trickier and ultimately unsuccessful because it's a separate branch of government and there were a lot of other issues involved. But I just really agree with the spirit of this, you know, especially since, you know, 70 is the new 60. People are living longer and vigorous way past when
you're just
they
trying to get me in trouble.
Maybe so, but the point is, I think it's good. And these artificial caps and restrictions, I don't think serve us anymore if they ever did. So, I support the bill.
You know,
Representative Mahoney.
I'm a retired pipe fitter that managed to get out before I was 60. I'm not sure why anybody wants to work after age 70, but I guess they get to do that. But I would hope that you would pass this bill to judiciary and we all get to the floor on time and have fun there, too.
Thanks for reminding us that hopefully we'll keep the questions to a minimum. Any questions, members? Anybody that I know you have a couple witnesses that can testify, but is there anyone that has to testify to this bill or feels they want to? Seeing none, Representative Simon will renew his motion that House File 2614 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Thank
so moved.
Chair, thank you.
Meeting is adjourned.